And welcome back to Coast to Coast. In a moment, the world according to Lionel. Now, you're probably saying, who's that? Well, I'm going to tell you all about him when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Now, if you're a talk radio aficionado, you probably have heard the name Lionel. But if you just pop in and pop out, you probably haven't. So let me tell you a little bit about him. He's a television and radio news decoder, a legal analyst, a Renaissance lawyer, author, television commentator. He's been a veteran in talk radio, ex-prosecutor, a musician, and a stand-up comic as well. And as the late Gore Vidal once said, he's a conspiracy analyst, not a theorist. And here he is on Coast to Coast, the world according to Lionel. We're going to have some fun tonight, Lionel.
We certainly are. How are you, my friend?
I am fine. And I want to tell some folks about your incredible career because it's so important to tonight. You were once syndicated by our network. You have had in your career incredible ratings. You started your own syndicated show on our station, WOR, in New York. So we've got a lot of familiarities about that. And happy upcoming birthday to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
That's great. What are you doing now these days?
Well, right now, I am doing a variety of things. As I have said, and as you so kindly noted, I'm doing a lot of commentary and writing and blogging and appearing and doing stand-up and authoring and basically observing the world and trying to, how do I say this, redirect the country, this is a pretty grand effort on my part, but to kind of readdress the way we think about news and about what's going on in the world. And I'm having the time of my life because these, George, as you know, are very strange times.
Oh, my God.
That require a new analysis.
They sure are. Now, you've been an attorney by trade, and then you started listening to talk radio shows, calling in as callers, sometimes changing your name a little bit, but you were heard down to WFLA. Was it Gabe Hobbs, our old friend? Did he hear you?
Gabe Hobbs came later. Actually, it was prior to this. It was just a bunch of people, Bob Schumann, Randy Michaels, and others. And I had called up because I had just, for whatever it's worth, happened to notice this wonderful new medium, and I, George, frankly, was bored to tears. It was the most lame and pablum and milk toast and vanilla. So one day, I called up, and I thought, you know, I'm going to apply a new rule. I'm going to be the first caller and set the tone. Number two, I'm never going to talk about whatever the host is talking about. And number three, when at all possible, insult the host's family. And it started, and I said, this is really fun. To make a long story short, after doing this, I was in law school at the time, and I graduated. I was a prosecutor that went into private practice. And the then president of ABC Radio, Jim Arcara, heard me and said, would you like to come to New York? And my first New York stint was WABC, where I did mornings. And then from there on, as they say, George, the rest is history.
It sure is. I mean, you have really paved some incredible, incredible waves.
As have you, sir.
Yeah, not like you.
No. Please, don't even attempt to compare what you have done. I cannot tell you how thrilled I am that there is, I don't even want to call this, George, alternative, because that sounds almost sinister, but if ever alternative deserved accolades, it is you, sir, because this is, very frankly, something that talk radio needs, and that's exciting, interesting talk, period.
Well, as you've always said in your career, it's not boring.
Precisely. You know, it's funny you say that. I have colors of boring. You know, some people, George, can see sunsets. Some people have the ability to actually feel colors and see. I have a palette of boring. I am bored by people on so many levels. that I think I have an overdeveloped sense of boring, and I get bored really interesting. But what you are talking about, and what I want to talk about, and what I have been talking about, that receives the most, dare I say, resistance from people, and skeptics, and is what I find to be thoroughly fascinating. Because thoroughly fascinating oftentimes scares people.
It sure does.
And I never really understood that. I don't understand. You know, you talk about, you know, if you tell somebody, George, you know, UFOs or EBs or extraterrestrial biological entities or ufology or an alternative way of looking at the world, or if you doubt the official story, immediately what you are met with, I don't have to tell you this, but I have been, is, oh, you're a tinfoil hat conspiracy person. You're a tinfoil. And I always correct people, George. I said, no, we haven't used tinfoil in years. It's aluminum. We haven't used tinfoil since the Johnson administration, Andrew Johnson. But you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
People, I'm here, I am telling you this. Why do you think that is? This resistance to not overthrowing the country, but it's almost heresy for you to dare dispute the official story about anything.
When I first came to Los Angeles, I went to lunch with just a talk radio giant out here on our affiliate, KFI, Bill Handel. And Bill came to lunch wearing an aluminum hat. And he had it all pinched up like a little pyramid,
yes.
And it was on his head. And he sat there for lunch, and I said, Bill, you can take it off now. And he did. But his point was, a lot of different people follow this kind of a show. And, you know, Lana, I go to events and conferences and speeches all around the country, so I'm meeting our listeners face-to-face, and they are, by far, the most intelligent, connected people I have ever met. I've been in corporate meetings with other people. I've been all over the map. These listeners, people who have listened to you, people who listen to me, are the most tuned in, educated people, and they know what's going on. They know.
You know, it's funny. I feel the same way. There's a terrible thing that we do in this country. And by the way, I don't want to sound too gratuitous here, but I love my country. I love when people say that. I always say, thank you for clarifying that. Thank you for loving our country. But I don't love necessarily governments or people in power. It's like having a team that you love. You might be a Dodgers fan. You might be a Yankees fan. You may not like the general manager or the front office, but you love your team.
That's right.
And Americans and our food and our culture and our music. But we are doing this, something which is very, very frightening to me, is the way we have become almost medieval over the notion of mental health. And this is a typical Stalin technique. When you are to be dismissed, George, when you are to be considered an outlier or not to be paid attention, oh, there's that Nori, oh, God, you know, as we say in the South where I'm from, bless his heart. When they say bless your heart, be careful.
Yes.
That means, but we use the word crazy. You know, he's, you know, that Nori's crazy. He, you know, he's crazy, crazy, crazy. And I, in my career as law and I'm very familiar with the notion of mental illness, psychotic behavior, which is really what people talk about. And I am telling you that in order for you to understand, to even appreciate what you and others are suggesting, you can't be crazy. You can't follow it. And as you say, people who believe that there's another version of truth, of reality, you know, if you never had a radio, you'd swear there was no radio waves.
That's right.
You wouldn't know what people were talking about. So I'm very troubled, and especially with the tragedy of Robin Williams. You know, we throw this word crazy. You know, he's crazy. These people are nuts. You know, that whoever the politician is. And I'm frightened by how we're kind of conflating disagreeing with somebody with the fact that they're mentally ill.
Well, and what I'm finding now, too, is that there's no room for debate on anything anymore, whether all these subjects we're going to go through tonight, the UFOs, mm-hmm. the police state, a little revisiting of 9/11, mm-hmm. and just I just want to get your views on some other things.
Sure.
We've lost the ability to debate people without people screaming, yelling, hating each other.
Hear, hear.
It's out of control. I mean, I'm going back to St. Louis for a few weeks next week, and that is right in the heart of Ferguson, Missouri, which is a northern mm-hmm. suburb there. And it's out of control right now. I've got people sending me emails on both sides, people who are supporting the cop for killing this African-American youth, and then I've got people who support the unfortunate dead African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And one, we don't know what happened. We really don't. We've got a witness today who said she saw them wrestling. The cop was in the car. The young man was standing outside the car, and it seemed like they were wrestling within it, and then all of a sudden shooting started. Nobody knows really what happened. But the bottom line is you can't talk to people anymore.
No.
Without them hating you or screaming. It's gone.
And, you know, you and I might disagree. You know, in law, you often hear sometimes when you watch TV, which is the worst way to learn about the courtroom, but sometimes, George, somebody may say, objection, argumentative. And to the layperson, that may sound like, oh, you're arguing, you're being, you know, rude, or you're yelling, or you're being, you know, discourteous, you know. And no, argumentative merely means no, you're making an argument. You're discussing, you're trying to take a set of facts and tell the jury what it means, and you do that in closing argument. The argument is when you say something, and then I say something, and whereas I may not agree with you, you know, whether it's those horrible talk radio topics like capital punishment mm-hmm. or abortion or whatever the topic du jour is. But if I listen to you and I say, okay, well, I disagree, but it's hard for people to understand. That doesn't mean you're necessarily wrong. You know, there are people, I understand, you know, I happen to be, when it comes to a particular story, pro-choice, whatever the heck that means. I don't ever make decisions about abortions during the day. But I can understand, George, exactly what people think and how they think when they are against either choice or what have you. I am against the death penalty, but I can understand exactly how you feel and maybe why you feel. And you're not crazy. You're not loopy. I just, and that's it. And you're George Nuri, you're my friend,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
And we go on.
Yes.
You know, life continues. It really does. I mean, you have, you've looked at some people that I like their work. Alex Jones, Paul mm-hmm. Joseph Watson. You have pointed out how they use other sources when they write their own work or when they comment on things that are going on in this country mm-hmm. and around this planet. And a lot of people will just hear, I'm on Alex's show tomorrow, by the way, Lionel, and a lot of people will hear Alex, for example, and think not only is it just his view, but he made it up.
Right.
Where he actually goes out and does his homework.
The stories themselves can be so, how do we say this, so incredible. May I give you an example of this classic rule?
Absolutely.
That I think.
Sure thing.
Years ago, I lived for a long period of my time. You know, I don't know when, if ever you had that moment that Saul on the road to Damascus, that moment, the lightning bolt, or maybe you had a series of them. I don't know if you ever had that, but it's happened to me. And I was absolutely rocked to the core in so many ways on 9/11 because I'm here in New York and was here that day. And not so much that, but anyway, from that point on. And it made me look, not only, it made me reevaluate everything, government, media, the truth, whatever mm-hmm. that is. And invariably what happens is I will look at a subject right today, and I've heard you and listened to you for years, and you've had a host of stories. And if you talked about anything, if you said, and let's people love to make fun of either the Illuminati, which they don't know what that is, reptilians, they throw this a tinfoil hat. They refer to some poor guy getting anally probed. There are these little
yep.
comedic memes that, you know, that they use. I don't care what you say. The first thing I am very proud to say is, I don't know, but I'm going to look this up. Because, George, I don't rule anything out.
You can't.
Nothing. There's something called Pilger's Law that says, don't believe anything unless it's and until it's officially denied. And I hate to be cynical about that, but UFOs, for example, when you say that to people, you have a group of people that will immediately accept everything because they intuitively think, well, there has to be something. And I respectfully submit that's not a good reason, even though we may, quote, agree. And then you have others who deny it, primarily, George, because they've never read the first thing about what anybody's ever said.
That's right. That is so true.
So how do you deal with these people? How do you say, ma'am, sir, respectfully, you don't know what you're talking about. Get back with me after you've done some research.
Do you find that now people are more ticked off with so many things than ever before?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wonder, George, if people have always said that. You know, have you ever heard people say, you know, it's tough raising a child today?
Yeah.
Today is the worst
time to raise
a child.
Well, they said it during my time. They said it during my parents' time.
Right. So I think there may be something to this. But I will tell you that all you have to do is just look around. And by virtue of this wonderful system of tubes called the internet, as someone once said, you have the library at Alexandria in your pocket, and you can look elsewhere. And when you see this flattening of the earth, to use that Friedman term, not only here, but around the world, and you think, you know, this is extremely scary, because in the old days, there was a time when, and I hate to do this, George, but there was a time when we could identify our enemies better. You know, when we all galvanized our efforts to stop polio. And, you know, that, I think when people worry about Ebola, which they should, I don't think people remember what polio was like.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But if they had a George Nuri show that day or during that time, I don't think they would have said, do you ever think they will weaponize polio? See, today you can ask that question, but you didn't then. So what does that say about humankind now?
That is so true. We've grown. Lionel, stay with us. We're going to hit this break, and we're going to come back in just a moment. More with The World According to Lionel here on Coast to Coast AM. He's also got a book out there called Everyone is Crazy Except You and Me, and I'm Not So Sure About You. I'm George Nori, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Nori with you, Lionel with us, and of course his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's lionelmedia.com for you. Lionel, since you brought up 9/11, let's talk a little bit about that, if we can. And you were in New York when this occurred. Tell me your personal day, that moment, when that was going on.
I remember watching television that morning. I was not aware of anything, and I happened to be on the phone with my now late father. And the local NBC affiliate had said that a plane had flown into one of the towers. I think it was a South Tower first. And I was talking to him, I said, hey, have you seen anything about this? I thought nothing of this.
And that was not unusual, because didn't Thurman Munson, the Yankee catcher, crash into a building or something?
No, it wasn't Thurman Munson. It was on the East River. There was another, right, there was, it's funny you mentioned
another,
that because I had forgotten that.
It was another ball player.
Yes, it had. There was something a while, forgive me for not remembering, but yes, it had happened. And, you know, everybody kind of knew that there's a possibility. There's the famous story of a B-29 or something flying into the Empire State Building during the war, and everybody kind of knew that when you have a building that size and that in that particular shape, and you know, it's bound to happen. And I thought nothing of it. And I said, did you see anything? No. And then all of a sudden, as I'm watching, they're saying, well, it must have been a regular private pilot. Somebody, one of the news people, said, no, play that back. And they played it back, this one particular scene, and they saw the plane.
You could see it, yeah.
Again, nobody said anything. Nobody, it did not. It's so funny. You think you know how you're going to react. You think, George, that this terrorist alarm in you is going to go off. I didn't think anything. Then the second one.
And then you knew something was afoot.
Well, what really did it was, and then the Pentagon. And absolute, there is a, and I never want to go through this again, and this may sound strange, but being here, I thought, this is so many thoughts fly through your mind. I've said this before, George, and I know it sounds trite, but it was surreal. Not out of body, but we're in a movie. This is not happening.
Like it was staged.
Or you kind of rehearsed it, maybe, kind of, sort of, in your mind. So we went, I immediately, later on, went around Times Square, and it was complete and total, a cooperative confusion and chaos.
Was there panic there, Lionel?
No.
No panic.
Little things were strange. People who would not normally talk to each other. People that you would look at, you would see, for example, an African-American young man and an older white guy who normally but probably would not engage in conversation. Everybody immediately looked to each other and said, what the heck? It was this. And then the stories. I heard stories of individual horror that people saw. A friend of mine's daughter was running, and the person that she was running with suffered basically a decapitation by virtue of this debris that fell. And people who ran, and if you know the geography of New York, ran from downtown, which is in the financial district, and ended up, before you knew it, almost in Harlem, 110 Street. I mean, people ran, didn't know how far they went. It was just complete confusion. There was people walking. This was so interesting. When you watched the local news, they would give instructions, please don't bring money. Please don't go past this barrier. But what we do need, if you do want to bring this by, bottled water, batteries for cell phones and the like, because they were at a premium, and this is what got me, booties. The dogs that were used to either look for cadavers or to assist, were cutting their paws on debris, and I thought, how odd. People would line up 57th Street from the Hudson straight down as far as the eye could see, stood at night, that night, with candles in doorways, unsolicited, quiet, controlled, mature, sober, surreal. It was, you could not believe it. And then, George, there were pictures. People would have for weeks and weeks after pictures of missing relatives. Have you seen this person? Have you seen? In retrospect, they weren't lost. They weren't confused. Why would I see this person? It was just complete and utter desperation. Where are they? Nobody in New York writes down where they're going to go that day. It's a big city. The World Trade Center had all types of businesses. People just never came back.
I will remember where I was for the rest of my life on two events. Kennedy's assassination when I was 13 and 9/11 when I was at home and my daughter called me and told me about this and I turned on the TV. I'll never forget those two. Oh, well, just like you. The first episode was more of confusion. What a tragedy. Then when the second one hit, I said, we're under attack. And then the Pentagon and then the situation in Pennsylvania. But the bottom line here for me and you, at what point did you say, because it wasn't that day, and maybe it was weeks or months or years later, there's something strange about this story?
Well, that was later on. Let me just say, I go back and watch a lot of the, by virtue of documentaries and people who put together what happened that day after the fact. And when you look at what happened after the fact, the first thing I noticed was, boy, they sure knew who was involved that quickly.
They sure, just like Oswald, same thing.
Yes. They had, not only that, they had pictures of these individuals in that almost like the Gambino crime family structure, you know, the where they were sitting. And I thought, well, if they knew who these people were and they knew their association with terrorist activities, how did they get on the plane in the first place? But it never really occurred to me until I was sitting, interesting, years later, and it might have been at WOR. And George, I looked at the website, and it was the Shanksville Flight 93 picture. The picture that everybody, almost through a Pavlovian type of connection, you look at it and say, oh, that's Flight 93, Todd Beamer, let's roll. That's, And it's a dimpled, you know this, it's a area, it was grassy, it's like in the field or something, just trees in the background. There's a dimpled, pocked, kind of an indented portion. It looks kind of charred, perhaps some steam or smoke or something. A couple of fire trucks, people standing around. And I asked somebody, I said, what is this? He said, that's Shanksville. That's Flight 93. And I asked the question that immediately started me on the tinfoil hat road
to doubt.
I had the unmitigated audacity, George Norrie, to ask, where's the plane? I sound like Hervé Villechaize from Fantasy Island.
The plane.
And I said, where is the plane with 6-ton titanium engines and wheels and stabilizers and luggage and people and black boxes and magazines and luggage? Where's the plane?
If it crashed, it's supposed to be in one spot.
Yes.
And it wasn't. It was scattered everywhere.
In fact, at a place called New Baltimore. And Indian Lake, about 8 miles away.
Yeah.
Later on, because of the internet.
Now, some people say, well, you know, the plane was, you know, being misguided, so it was probably cracking up in the air. I don't believe so. No.
But here's the thing, and you just pointed something out. We're going to give this a name, George. We're going to call this the Norrie phenomenon. I'm going to give it to you. I've always wanted to be like, I want to meet Mr. Heimlich or Dr. Heimlich. I want to have a maneuver named after me. But this is going to be, this is called when you are posed with a scenario that you cannot answer, and it is problematic because, A, you feel kind of stupid for never having thought about this before, maybe, or B, you don't like the implications of this, maybe somebody's lying to you, and then C, all of the above, you will go through this phenomenon where you will pull out of your hat, we'll say, it's a family show.
Mm-hmm. Good name.
A series of explanations that you will make up on the spot. And you will say, well, as you know, George, when a plane flies at a certain speed, every atom, every interstitial connection between this, it just disappears and vaporizes. Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's what happened. And they'll just make it up. Because what you're suggesting, George, is frightening.
Yes, it is. It is. And then we have, throughout all of this, the strange case of building number 7.
The most amazing of them all, at 5:20. Do you know that most people, and I'm here in New York, do not know what anybody's talking about? Well, you mentioned Building 7. In fact, there's an organization that was called buildingwhat.org. And they got that name, George, when they went to a federal judge and they filed a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, and they said, we're here for such and such. We want these documents disclosed. And they said, well, what is this about? And the federal judge asked. And they said, Building 7. And the judge said, Building what? And that was the name. It was 5:20 p.m. The third building. Remember, there were 5 events. North Tower, South Tower, Shanksville, which is Flight 93.
That's right.
The Pentagon. And Building 7. And Building 7 was not hit by any plane, no mysterious jet fuel, and that jet fuel does a number on steel like you cannot believe.
That's true.
And it will cause symmetrical. And by the way, what I'm talking about is the physical evidence. I'm not suggesting any kind of complicity on the part of our government or George Bush or Dick Cheney or anybody. I'm not talking about anything other than what I see with my eyes and what physical evidence is showing.
But then how do you explain 7?
Well, what happened was the official story was that there were fires that caused, or that were brought about. And these fires caused there to be a perfectly symmetrical melting of 80 columns or so. This is according to NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, a government organization, so you can believe it. And by virtue of this fire, George, it all gave out exactly at the same time, just fire from carpet and desks and drapes and computers or whatever it was. Remember, hit by no plane, no jet fuel, and it fell in perfect symmetrical precision on its own footprint. I mean, straight down. It didn't
straight
fall over. It didn't have a portion that caved in, followed by the rest. No, it was, we've all seen those Vegas scenes. We've all seen controlled demolition.
That's right.
It fell perfectly. And it also fell, and this was amazing also, at what is called free fall speed, as though nothing resisted each floor, each story, each section from falling.
They all went at the same time, basically.
Exactly. And recently, Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth appeared on C-SPAN, breaking this mainstream media firewall. And all he said was, I'm not saying anything other than the physical evidence. We are 2,200 architects, engineers, physicists, metallurgists, structural engineers. 2,200. We have signed our names to this report.
The best of the best.
Yes. And when you say that, George, when you say that, instead of people running out into the street saying, wait a minute, if you lied to me about this, or if you were wrong, let me be fair, if you were wrong about this, shouldn't we at least have another investigation?
Yep.
Do you know what Governor Kane, it was Lee Hamilton and Governor Kane and the 9/11 Commission, when they were asked about Building 7, they said, Well, since there was no loss of life, we really don't have any time to go on. So this, and this is 13 years after the fact, do you know also that there were, on that day, there were people, there were firemen, police officers, first responders, and let's not forget them, who said the building's going to fall. They heard explosions. You can see this. George, why aren't we curious?
I know. It's crazy. I think even a couple commission members said we should reopen this.
Max Cleland.
Yeah.
Bob Graham. And that's just a part of this. This was something. Now, I'm not even going to go into the additional information, because if you hit people too much, and I think with an audience as astute as yours, they may have heard this. But if you hit somebody, if you hit too much about what was found in the debris, because these architects and engineers go even further, they even say they found evidence. According to them, not me, not Lionel, not North Newry, but these individuals, they found evidence, they say, of what is nanothermite, which is an industrial, military-grade form that is used in demolitions.
That's right.
And when you say this, people will put their hands up for reasons I'll never know and say, stop.
And what about the finding in the rubble of a passport from one of the hijackers?
That was one of the other ones. You're talking about Muhammad Atta.
I mean, come on.
How does that even happen? But what about the fact that with the Pentagon, let's just jump to that for a second. Now, you know, when you're a juror, you're told by the prosecutor or the defense lawyer, and the judge will instruct you, use your common sense. When you listen to this, use your common sense. Isn't it funny, George, that in Washington, D.C., which is a city that's known as being a pretty popular tourist place, attraction, where people have cameras, and this is before cell phones, but just cameras and recording devices, that on that date, when a plane flown by a fellow named Hani Hanjour, who we knew about, again, how did we know this? Why? Who tried a month before to rent a plane, and they said, you don't even have the basic skills to fly a single prop. Get out of here. You can't fly a plane. He commandeered a plane, and we knew who he was. Did what, a 300-degree arc, dropped 7,000 feet, and flew 6 feet off the ground, left this 16-foot hole inside this building, and George, not one person who didn't have a camera, didn't say, hey, what's that noise? Oh, my God, there's a plane. And when Larry Klayman from Judicial Watch asked for the official information, they had three grainy Loch Ness Monster quality pictures, and nobody asks just why.
Lina, we'll pick this up. There's much more to talk with you about. We'll wrap up 9/11. And get into your thoughts on what does the government know of UFOs next?